because technology has sped up the way some of these folks work, they're able to take on things that they really couldn't have before. In addition to their work, just out of the goodness of their hearts or because they have a passion for it, and that's cool.
Why the hell didn't I think of that? You know, this is, of course, like, I've worked in nonprofits for a decade. This is the kind of thing that would never occur to me to do. And yet, you know, here's one of my peers who's also a freelancer. She's a graphic designer who, you know, I have a lot in common with on paper, but she's thinking about that stuff, and I would not have thought of that.
So, Mike. Mike, this is part two of this conversation of freelancing,
mm-hmm.
right? And we've gotten some early feedback already mm-hmm. on number 10.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring it to you. You know what they said?
Is it good?
They said they really liked me.
You know, I've heard that
that's not what,
before.
But that's not what they said.
Are you sure?
I was just joking.
Oh, did they say they liked me?
No.
Well, that's old news, too.
That's old news.
That's old
Everyone news. Likes you, Mike.
Yeah, that's my wife they like.
But she's not even on the podcast.
Well, they listen to the podcast for my sake because I'm her husband and she likes that.
Oh.
That's how much they like her.
So it's like a favor to her.
Pretty much. That's how I survive.
Okay. Well, she's not the only smart, attractive woman because we have two of them on this podcast. And in fact... If our listeners have not heard number 10, they should go back and do that right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm thinking something else.
What?
Well, I'm thinking, why stop at 10? If they haven't listened, there's 9, yeah. 8, 7, 6, et cetera.
Get with the program. Yeah. Binge listen now.
Listen to 10, listen to 11, and then go back and get them all.
Okay. Got it.
For a low, low price of...
Right, exactly.
Soon to be available on Time Life Publications.
Oh my goodness, and now how much would you pay? When do I get the Ginsu knives? All right, so what did we cover last time, just in brief? We brought up this topic of the freelance life and all of the implications of that. You know, where do you work? What's your space like? How about your relationships with other people and with other workers? How do you find work? You know, right. Who's managing all this stuff?
It's a whole lifestyle thing, it seems like.
It really is,
yeah.
Yeah. And why is it that we are so curious about this?
Well, I'm curious because a couple of things. One is that the trends, we're rapidly moving to a society where a large portion of people are doing this. Right now, it's like 20%, up from 12% like
right.
just a few years ago.
Right.
And I've heard projections up to like 40% in just a few years.
That's huge.
This is a huge societal change.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not quite a free agent, but I'm a small businessman.
Sure.
Which looks a lot like that in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You're still maybe, I don't know, a contingent worker, unless you grow to be a huge, yeah.
Right.
So maybe we should just get into it then, because they've got a lot of wisdom to share. And it seems like they have integrated this lifestyle, they've embraced it, and they're taking responsibility for it. So let's listen in on how they're doing that.
Megan and April.
Right, Megan and
from
April.
From New York City.
Right, so we're going to start with Megan. She'll mm-hmm. be the next voice you hear. And we got to talking about how the lifestyle changes are evidenced because we got to talking about vacation.
Oh, vacation.
Do you, when I was newly married and working for myself, one of the things I realized is that my wife, who was an employee at a company, and I had very different perspectives about vacation. For her, vacation was, you know, something she could feel free to do and not try to take work with her. For me, I was conscious that I wasn't getting paid for vacation because I worked for myself. And I felt tempted to take work with me or keep track of work or check in with clients because I was afraid that my work life was going to fall apart while I was going on vacation. Do you have any, can you relate to that at all?
Absolutely, 100%. My family would say, you know, oh yeah, you're working, like, you're at home, because they all go to an office every day and have had the same career for decades. You're working again, like on some mysterious thing that they don't get. And then when we're on vacation together, they completely resent that I can't not answer, I can't not be on conference calls that the rest of the team that I'm working with is on, or that I can't just not answer my emails for 2 weeks. And that's because I don't have the security of knowing that that job is going to be there when I get back. So I do have to be responsive. Now, it's those trade-offs. They could never conceive of going to a yoga class in the middle of the day. My sister can't leave her classroom to go exercise, but she can also be off for 3 months in the summer and not wonder if in September she'll have a classroom to go to. It's just, so yes, I very much am that way. I feel like if I truly shut down, it's irresponsible, because the opportunity to work independently is a gift. And so it's a gift with certain contingencies, you know?
It sounds like Megan has my vacation.
I mean, yeah. She's been on vacation with you? I never saw her, because mostly our vacations are together.
Well, she and I go to different places together, apparently.
Oh, that explains it all. Yeah. That explains everything.
When I first went on vacation as a business owner, I remember bringing everything with me. I mean, I brought my laptop, I brought my phone, I didn't even want to tell people I was going. I wanted to see if I could keep the business going for that fear. And I remember having a conversation with Jennifer and realizing how unfair it was that I was actually pretending to be on vacation with her.
You wore the shorts and the hat.
Right. On the outside, I'm on vacation, but on the inside, I'm still working. I'm still, I'm checking in. I'm making phone calls. And it wasn't until I went on a vacation where I had no internet connection and no cell phone coverage.
You were at a loss, weren't you?
That I was like, ooh, and it really started to kill me, you know? And then I just released it. And I was like, you know what? Whatever happens, happens.
And you survived to tell the story.
And I got back and I talked to people, and half of them didn't even know I was gone.
Yeah.
They were busy with other things. Half of them, you know, this was when I was still learning about auto reply email. This is, you know, ways ago.
It's been a long time.
But the point was that the sky did not fall
right
while I was on vacation. It taught me an important lesson about if it's not going to cost that much, and I'm going to get all these benefits to really, truly being present for my family and my friends or whoever I'm with.
Right.
And to really deeply absorb the vacation. I wonder if it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, Ken, I do think she was there on vacation with you, because I think she was on vacation with me because I have the same experience.
Yeah.
And I think the last time I actually vacated was that period between when I was working for somebody and when I'm working for myself, and have my own business. And frequently, you know, I've flown away from vacations. I've left the beach and taken phone calls, and I've called. So it's always on you, always connected. So I'm glad that you got to go someplace where you were disconnected.
Yeah. If you wanted to wash your car and you had an unlimited supply of water, but you only used a cup of water per day, you would never get the car clean, no matter how much water you had. There's something about that full immersion of getting completely drenched in a way that does something, I think, to the soul.
Yeah,
that you just can't get by, you know, I call it jerking, you know. Oh, my phone's on. Oh, I heard a beep. Oh, you know, oh, got to check my email. Oh, you know, just like this constant knee-jerk reaction to check in.
Right.
I think it prevents something deeper from happening.
Well, thinking, reflecting, recreating, right?
Yeah.
Recreating is recreating, and God forbid boredom, so we can think.
Oh, I love boredom.
And create. Boredom's great for creativity,
it
isn't
sure
it?
Is. Right.
So we're always at the wheel of our devices these days, and expectations from others. And it sounds like even more so.
Yeah.
For people, these freelancers.
Yeah. And the word expectation is so clear there, or so key, I think, there. You know, for me to come to someone who I'm freelancing with or working for, a client, and say, look, here's my expectation. Here's my hope for this vacation,
right,
the kind of a way I'm hoping to have. And maybe we can talk about that before I go.
Yeah.
So you know how available I'm planning to be.
And what are the restrictions?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's a very helpful tool, and in being able to be comfortable with those boundaries, because I find today that people aren't comfortable with boundaries. But you know, the old expression that good fences make good neighbors is still applies. At the same time, these freelancers are living the life of executives. Executives give their lives to their work.
Yeah.
And they have this full responsibility. So I don't know any executive, and I'm sure they're out there, who can fully disconnect. Like the president obviously never disconnects. Like, but that's pretty high stakes, right?
Right, right.
But if when you hit that level, it's really hard to disconnect, and you're kind of expected to stay in touch somehow.
Yeah, right. There's this trade-off then that you're getting this extra freedom,
right,
but you're losing some of that security and that disconnection. So April spoke about that.
Yep. Well, I want to hear what she has to say.
All right.
I always maintain a variety of clients as much as possible so that if one drops out, there's a cushion of a bunch of other ones to take their place. I take on as much work as I can at any given time. I try to never say no to a new client if I feel like we could work well together. So my door's always open type of thing. So there's nothing contractually very much that I do about that. You know, I mean, we are both working at will, or, you know, the partnership is totally at will. So it's sometimes it doesn't work out and you do quit unexpectedly, or, you know, the relationship quits unexpectedly. But overall, I think just trying to make good decisions and do my best work is the best insurance I can have against that.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting that her insurance policy is to try to do good work.
Right.
And to say yes as much as possible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So she sounds to me like the triune senior operations officer.
Okay.
Right? You know, a COO, like the director of sales.
Yes.
And the director of customer service, or the vice president of sales, vice president of customer service, and vice president of operations, all wrapped in one.
Yeah.
Right. She's always on ensuring that things are being delivered.
Yes.
So they have a future. You know?
Right.
That's a lot of pressure.
That's got to take a toll over time, I would think.
Yeah. Well, but we're not in roles unlike that. So what's that like? What's it like for you, Ken?
It takes, my weekend starts like on Sunday night when I'm finally after 2 days, you know, and I just kind of collapse, you know, but it takes me from Friday night until Sunday night to start a weekend is how I'm experiencing it.
Right. Right. And I'm laughing because that was exactly my weekend just now.
Okay.
I was at a hyped up level where I got home yesterday from church at 2:30 or so after doing a lot of responsibilities there.
Yeah.
And then I had all this work stuff I needed to get done, and I needed to unplug.
Yeah.
Even though I needed to get a lot of work done.
Right.
And I was finally successful to unplug at like 5:00.
Right.
So from 5 to like 10:30, I unplugged, and then I put my head towards the week, you know? It's you're always there.
Yeah.
You're always on. And that's a lot of stress for a person to handle.
It is.
And so if we're heading towards this as a country or as a world,
yeah,
how do people cope with that? How do we deal with that? If we're all executives all the time, how do we handle that? It sounds like we need new coping mechanisms. We need new structures for our lives, and we need new skills, and then we need a new understanding of each other and how to relate.
Yeah. One thing I have done that has worked in that regard is that I've created a time block for administrative stuff where I don't schedule meetings. I don't meet with clients. I don't meet with my team. And that has been a buffer for me.
Right.
I know that time comes in the week, and if I really had to, I've got options there for what I could do.
So you unplug for kind of the administrative piece.
Yeah, the administrative piece. And that's not a complete answer to your question,
right,
but that's a partial answer.
What about the personal life side? Like, do you block for family? Do you block for hobbies as well?
Yeah. it's harder to do. You know, my wife will say, well, you know, I noticed you worked extra over here. Does that mean you're going to be with us extra over here? You know,
I don't think she's being serious. I think that's kind of like passive aggressiveness. What do you think?
I think you would know better.
Yeah. And I struggle with the same thing is, you know, where's family time come in? And if you, you know, both of us have offices attached to our houses. Mm-hmm. And so when do you detach from work? Just because we change rooms doesn't detach you, because you have all this responsibility that goes with you. And it's always reminding you, you don't have that 45 minute car ride, and you don't have, you can't place those worries behind and the responsiveness behind. So I, you know, one of my disappointments has been that I thought it would give me more flexibility for my family and more time with them. And in some ways it has. In some ways it just hasn't, as a small business guy. It just hasn't given me that. So it's a mixed bag.
Yeah. Well, it's a different lifestyle, right?
Yep.
It's not just a different business arrangement for work. So when I was thinking about the wisdom that we could glean from them, I asked this question about the difference between working with people in the same place at the same time versus kind of this remote worker where you're kind of working it from home, that sort of thing.
So it makes, working independently makes the actual work portion of any project faster, but it makes the process of getting to that work longer. Because when you're not communicating with a person in the same room, there's just more opportunities to miss each other. So you end up sending more emails, you end up having more phone conversations. And when you do finally get to the period that it's like, okay, hit the ground running, go, then you can usually get things done pretty quickly because there's a low level of distraction. But getting to that point takes longer because, well, when you're freelancing, it's one of the it's one of the sets of conversations you're having. And yeah, like there's some of out of sight, out of mind. When I'm working for clients that aren't even in New York, I have to keep putting myself in front of them for them to think of me because they're across the country. So that takes time too.
Yeah.
And energy, which isn't the case if you get off the elevator together.
That's got to be a real challenge to work for someone that never sees you on a day-to-day basis, out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
They could very well have a ton of work that you probably could do for them,
mm-hmm.
but they don't give it to you because they don't think to, or they have to package it, or you're kind of remote. They're like, okay, well, we didn't have anything scheduled for today. So am I interrupting her if I give her this stuff? It just seems like a bit of a challenge there.
So it reminds me of college days in my marketing classes on what product placement and pricing.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And so it's placement, right?
Yes.
It's constantly reminding folks, placing yourself before them, being in the right place, reminding them you have this product, because the people in the office, they have the primo placement.
Yeah.
And so you're going to go for the easiest.
They are the end cap.
They're the end cap. That's
right. You're in the middle of the shelf somewhere.
So I supervise 5 end caps and one person in the middle of the aisle or back in the warehouse.
But
right?
Back of the warehouse is kind of how it feels sometimes.
End cap versus warehouse.
So what do you do to keep in front of clients that have no reason to see you today or hear from you or whatever?
So she talked about getting in front of them.
Yeah.
So phone calls.
Right.
Catching up with them.
Yep.
Reminding them.
Right.
But isn't that what social media is as well?
Yeah, it can be. It's just less reliable. Like if I send you, if I phone you, I'm pretty sure you're going to get it and respond. Social media can sometimes be like, oh yeah, I haven't checked Facebook in 10 years.
Well, and it strikes me too that Facebook and LinkedIn, it really is the world for independent agents, for free agents. You don't find a lot of people in larger companies, you know, out there posting and checking out, except for recruiters and HR folks, right?
Right. They would use it for personal reasons, but not as much for career.
Maybe. But she's very cognizant that I have to be on the minds of these people. I have to have not just have name recognition, I have to have brand insistence.
Right.
Right.
Right. No, totally. And once you've got that, she says, you can be so much more efficient.
Right.
Like the actual work gets done really, really fast.
Well, once it gets to you, because why? there's no one interrupting you.
Yeah.
Right? So you want to be in front of them when you want to be in front of them.
Yeah.
And you want to kind of be hiding from all the coworkers so you can crank stuff out.
Right. I wish maybe this is technology for the near future, but wouldn't it be cool if you could be, you have some of both, like this hybrid environment,
yeah,
where when I'm working for you or when I'm in a certain work mode, let's say,
right,
I can be semi-visible to you, or at least you can be aware of what's right. going on.
Yeah.
You can feel like I'm interruptible now.
Right.
Or I can even see how interruptible you are.
Well,
or,
you have like the instant messaging pieces where people yeah. see green lights and red lights, right. and they use a lot of that. But I'm thinking about like more like, you know, Star Trek. Like you have a cloaking device.
Ooh.
You can be cloaked sometimes. And what did Frodo have in Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, he had a cloak of invisibility.
There you go.
Right. Yeah.
So you have a cloak of visibility.
Yes.
High visibility and a cloak of visibility, and you have to use them appropriately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems like a simple app.
Yeah. Well,
that's got to be a solved problem.
Let's get working on it this week, and we'll report on it next week.
Okay. Hey everyone, I've got an announcement here for all the leaders and salespeople out there. Credo Consulting just revised its presentation skills program for leaders called Present, Persuade, Perform. And here's the idea. If you're a leader, your job is to influence people. And you do that by communicating. So if communication is a tool in your toolbox, then public speaking is your power tool. Savvy leaders use public speaking opportunities as a way to engage hearts and shape minds and align people toward collective action. And in public speaking and sales opportunities, the stakes are high. You don't want to just wing it. So this program gives you the skills and tools you need to present with competence and confidence, persuading people to take action. One thing I like about it is the blended format. So it starts with an online video component where you can learn at your own pace before the training. And then there's a live workshop where you practice giving your presentation and receive professional coaching and feedback. Finally, you receive a video of your presentation so you can see exactly what others see and improve the next time around. Now, I was able to convince Mike to give our podcast listeners a special deal. Mention the WorkWise podcast and you'll receive $200 off this training when you sign up. For more information, go to credoconsulting.us/Present. If you're nervous about public speaking or just want to improve your game, this program will help you. I've personally watched hundreds of leaders over the years improve their speaking skills with this program, and now it's even better. And I think you'll love it. It's engaging, informative, and Mike makes everything fun. credoconsulting.us/present. Now back to the show.
So where are we going next with these young ladies?
Well, I think that it brings up this question. If you're managing your work and you're managing your life, then what are you using to manage it? Like, is there some kind of map? Like how do you, what's your plan? What's your rubric? And I was curious about that. April responded to that question.
So that makes it sound like, is it a map for today or is it a map for?
It's a map for like where you are and where you're going.
Okay.
How to get there.
Okay. Let's hear it.
One great thing has been talking to other people in a similar position, or it doesn't even have to be other freelancers, but I have a friend who's a huge role model for me. She's just a powerhouse of a person and so lovely and talented and progressive and all this stuff. And she said to me recently, oh, do you want to go to this program with me about joining a nonprofit board? I was thinking it might be a good career move at some point to give that a shot. And I thought, why the hell didn't I think of that? You know, this is, of course, like I've worked in nonprofits for a decade. This is the kind of thing that would never occur to me to do. And yet, you know, here's one of my peers who's also a freelancer. She's a graphic designer who, you know, I have a lot in common with on paper, but she's thinking about that stuff and I would not have thought of that. So being in the company of people who are making great moves and being open to what they say, and then we went to the program and it was interesting and I'll probably do that at some point. So definitely just keeping my ears open for that kind of stuff. I would say maybe overall though, and this might just be my mood today and things change in this realm all the time, but I'm kind of putting to bed the notion that I need to have more of a map than there is and kind of trying to embrace that tendency that I have to just take things in a sort of a day-by-day fashion. And it's funny because I'm a big planner in some ways. Like I plan trips way ahead of time. You know, I'm a infamously frugal, like, you know, I do a lot that would be considered kind of micromanagerial planning stuff. But when it comes to longer term life planning, I'm finding that this whole follow your bliss deal is working pretty well. And I'm kind of just experimenting, or I want to get good at experimenting with the fact that maybe that's just how it is. And maybe I don't have a master plan. If I continue to do work that I think is interesting and work with people that I like, I think that more and more down the road, I'll be shown things that I like. I'll be able to, you know, one door will open, the next door will open. You know, if I just keep doing things I'm interested in and like, I think that my experiences will build naturally and show me where to go, rather than me coming up with an idea and pitching it out there and then running toward it.
It sounds like that question kind of evoked in her some reflection and that she had been already doing.
Yes.
And there's a lot in there. And I'm not quite sure how to take it. I think it's probably a very personal answer.
Yes.
But so you had the conversation with her. You know her a bit. So how should we take that response? What do you think about that?
I think she really is the kind of free spirit that comes along and says, I've embraced not having a plan. She's being authentic there. And, you know, she puts the free in freelancer. I mean, she really takes the opportunities as they come, not too worried about, you know, be responsible, good things will happen. Even the way she talked about her network. Did you notice that? Mm-hmm. She said, you know, I put myself in the company of people and they're bringing me opportunities. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like put yourself in the right pond and you'll get the right fish.
Which is, in a way, is a strategy, right? That's a strategy.
It is. It's more of a plan than maybe she gives it credit for. Right.
Yeah. And it sounds like what she's actually doing is releasing the guilt, maybe, of feeling like she should be more planful and strategic and micromanage her future than she has traditionally done. And she's felt like she had to do that. But now she's saying, you know what?
She's released control of that. And you know, I can appreciate that. Right. I mean, there's a lot about business that you really can't control. And a plan is not going to give you more control necessarily over opportunities. But that having been said, I think there's a real difference probably between a freelancer and a small business in that regard.
Yeah, good point.
Because I think if you take a small business and a group of people and you start just like flitting about with this opportunity and that opportunity, it can start to turn out to be a lack of focus.
Right. Yeah. And you can't necessarily trust people will bring things to you. Because once you're set on the future and growing and you have obligations, then the come as you may doesn't necessarily work as well.
Well, and also what opportunities should they bring to you? I mean, every time they see you, you're chasing a different path. So
what's my identity?
Yeah. So I think as a business, you do need to still have a certain, you know, definite, something you're known for, right?
Yeah.
That's why we get into branding. Your brand needs to stand for something.
Right. So she's kind of having a bohemian approach to this, right? And people know that and they know where her skill sets, essentially.
And that's part of her brand, perhaps.
Right. I think that's what I'm thinking. I don't know. So it's working for her and that's good. And it's good to embrace who you are, right? That's part of what we tell people. Embrace who you are and live through that.
Yeah.
The rest, you know, I'd want to hear from some more people to see what I conclude on that.
Yeah. So we're interested in wisdom. We're interested in the growth mindset. And so far, these two ladies seem to be embodying that mindset.
They're very self-reflective.
They are.
They're asking what they're learning.
Right.
They're taking their opportunities and learning from them rather than consider them as failure. So they're being very kind of resilient in their approach to things.
Right. So let's get some more of those responses that have turned into that resilience. I asked Megan about some of the early lessons that she learned when she was first making this transition into freelancing.
Well, people need you to be very clear. And you almost have to be, which was very hard for me, more obvious about what you do and how you do it and why you do it than you would ever be if you had the protection of an organization to hide behind. And that was really daunting for me, it still is. you know, I would kind of talk about things that I could do in a roundabout way, or because I didn't want to appear to be boastful. But in order for a client to get what you do, you have to be really clear. So that was a big lesson. And just like you, you know, with, you have to be perceptive in the, another lesson was how to be perceptive. So when you're curating or organizing an arts event or some kind of program, you have to be really perceptive about what an audience wants and needs. And that's the same thing that you have to do with a client. You have to watch them and listen to them closely and pick up what they're putting down. Another lesson was just like trust your intuition about what you think the expectation is and then move on that. Other lessons. Nobody is thinking about all of the things that you're doing more than you are. Everybody's thinking about the thing that you're doing for them. And so you really have to understand how to build good systems so that you don't fall apart or just like, you know, end up treading water on projects.
You know, these ladies in this regard sound like twins. Twins are always opposites.
Right?
They look alike.
Yeah.
But very often they're just very different.
Yeah.
Very different people.
Megan has a very different approach. She wants to be clear. She wants to be known. She's putting it out there. And I imagine that there are certain clients that would really respect that.
Yeah. You know, I imagine, and maybe I'm a little biased, I think that Megan's given us more of a recipe for success. And in a way, April does say that. She says she puts herself in situations,
right,
where she sees people. But it sounds like Megan's creating those situations, making a plan to make sure they happen, and being more direct about it with a message coming across, as opposed to placing herself in a situation.
Well, I think she's saying she's learned that she needs to have that to be effective.
Right.
And I think one of the things behind that she's not saying is that you have such limited time with people that if you're wasting that time not getting to the point of how you can be useful or where the connection is, then that's a missed opportunity.
And I really liked what she said. She has to have systems in place. Mm. And what I heard from that was that I have to have a method, a procedure, something that's going to keep me bringing back to it and getting it done, because it can't be happenstance or else it never happens. So yeah. I've got to be making this happen as part of my work.
So what about you? Do you have such a system? Have you found anything?
Wow, that's a heck of a question. So I like to be more systematic than I am.
Okay.
And I have some systems in place.
Uh-huh.
And I find myself, you know, I need to take some of the same advice is putting things in that system to get them going.
Yeah.
It's critical because other things will always take up your time.
Yeah.
Unless you build those systems and you stick to them. So I myself need to take that advice.
You're actually working when you're working on those systems. You're not getting paid. You're not, you know, it's not working in the same
right.
sense, but you have to see that as actually part of the job.
Working
right?
on the business.
Yeah.
And it's one of the pieces that, you know, I'm always talking to folks about is if you wanted to get done, you need to build a system for it.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to get to doing that.
Yeah.
And that's a great discipline you need to have if, in my estimation, you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
But when you go into a large corporation and you are trying to manage your career and figure out your future, that's part of this. That's part of the political savvy, is knowing how to get your capabilities and your accomplishments before people, so that your great work can be seen and appreciated. And that's a very similar thing. It's just done a little differently.
Yeah, and it's not only true inside the corporations, it's also true as a free agent. And April spoke to that about needing to communicate the value of her services to a client who was questioning it.
Mm-hmm. Something that I wish I knew a better way to impart to clients right away, and something that I imagine other freelancers suffer with too, is communicating to clients this sounds so rudimentary, but that quality work takes time, it takes effort. And for example, I had a client recently, I don't know if this one is going to work out, which is too bad, but you know, it can't all work out, where he basically said, okay, I want somebody to take all this writing stuff off my plate because I want to do other stuff with my business. And I said, sure. So I wrote some stuff for him and I invoiced him at the end of the month, and he said, wow, that was a lot of time. We got to like cut this down. You know, I can't afford to pay this much or whatever. And I was kind of like, well, you noticed how much time it was taking up from your day and you wanted to get that time back and you wanted to give those tasks to somebody else. And now you just see that time reflected over here and you see how much time it took me to do that stuff. So it was, he was surprised that it took me as long as it did to do these things. And apparently they were taking him a long time, and that's why he didn't want to do them. So, you know, it'll be fine, I'm sure, in whatever way it works out. But I think there's, you know, just there has to be, I have to do a better job, I guess, of maybe setting expectations for people. And this is something for every freelancer, every business person to think about, the whole expectations piece. But just making sure you communicate your business, the real value of your business, and the real, you know, if you try to do your best work, you'd be as good as you can at your job, all that stuff, that it will take time, it will cost some money, and that's what someone's signing up for when they come to you asking for your services. It's not a volunteer situation. I'm not going to do a shoddy job and ask for, you know, a small amount of money. You know, I'm going to try to do a great job and ask you for what I think is a reasonable amount of money. So that's been something that's been harder to communicate than the easy stuff, and particularly because I started out with some clients that I already had a relationship with, there was no need to set up those expectations. So I guess that's something that freelancers stand to learn the hard way if they don't take the time at the beginning to describe fully to themselves and then be able to describe to others the real value of their services and what people can expect in return for their money. That's not even just the deliverable, you know, it's the time they'll save, it's the inventive new way somebody will do something for them, it's the you know, added exposure that the work is going to bring, or whatever it is. But I think that's something I could have thought more about at the beginning.
So communicating the value for your services, that's a lesson you don't want to wait too long to learn. No. I would think.
And she was hesitant to say it.
Yeah.
And she used the word, it just seems so rudimentary.
Yeah.
But I would maybe change that word rudimentary to fundamental.
Hmm.
Because I think when she's saying it's rudimentary, it's one of the first things you teach. It's a basic thing. But there are a reason why those are the basic truths. The basic truths, the basic foundations are very simple and very powerful.
Yeah.
And we skip over them. And when you skip over them, you kind of sink.
Well, it's a little bit uncomfortable. It's the most uncomfortable part of the conversation usually is the money part, right? People mm-hmm. get, it's important to both parties, mm-hmm. but you kind of want that part to just be over.
Yeah. Yeah. But people, that's what people get upset about.
Yeah.
Right. And it also, I think, buried in there, I mean, in addition to the money, there's an implied conversation about your worth.
Yes.
How good you were, how much time it took you, and all this money.
Right.
And it's one of those things where I think entrepreneurs, free agents, anybody's offering services, it really has to find the place to where they're confident in what they're doing and comfortable with charging for it.
Yeah.
And if it's hard to get there, but she sounds like she's getting there and she's able to communicate it clearly and plainly and being able to walk away from it.
Yeah. I see that entrepreneurs that I've coached and talked to, the reason they don't want to charge what they should for their services is that they really want the job. They mm-hmm. really want the gig. And so they're afraid if they charge what it's worth that they're going to lose clients.
Right. And I think there's also sometimes an element of, I don't want to impose on this person.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to break their bank.
Yeah. It's very personal.
Be sensitive to that. Yeah. So it's very complicated.
Yeah.
It's very complicated.
So how do you handle that? Do you distance yourself from it and say, look, it's not about what I'm worth. It's about this task needs to get done? What's the value of offloading that task versus doing it yourself? I mean, in her case, that guy could have just kept writing himself, right? How much is it worth to him to have a writer on hand?
I think her thinking was very on target. I don't know how she expressed it.
Yeah.
The expression she used was maybe a little bit rough around the edges, but certainly, look, there's a value to the service, and you have opportunity costs. What are the value of those? And this is an economic exchange. And so we should do this only if there's economic value in this for both of us. Right. That's what the kind of market we're in. We're in a capitalistic market. So if there's value for me and there's value for you, then the exchange is worthwhile. But if it's not valuable to you, then maybe it's not, we shouldn't continue.
Yeah.
And keeping it at that level.
Yeah. When you say it, it doesn't sound so personal.
Right.
It doesn't sound so breaking his bank.
Yeah.
It sounds like more objective somehow.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's just how I need to approach it myself, is just, you know, root out the core principles of what's at play here.
Yeah.
Which is the core principles.
But you're a big human guy, though. You're a big proponent of the fact that we're humans at work, right?
Right.
So don't you think those feelings about money matter, and how do they play? How do they factor in?
I think that, the feelings are always at play. It's putting them in the right place.
Mm.
Right? So I'm an advocate of knowing what your feelings are, knowing what your anxieties are, and understanding them so that you can master them so they don't master you. Let them inform you. What's going on with you? Let them inform you of what's at stake in this situation. Let them inform you about how to deal with this, but also engage your reason. Don't let either one take over.
Yeah.
So that's where it is a good balance of that. So that's good advice from her.
Yeah.
That's good advice from her. I'm wondering if we have any more advice from our, you know, from either of our
friends. So let's wrap it up with a look at sort of their advice for like the future of wisdom at work. Okay. I got two more clips I want to play, one from each. So here's April on wisdom at work. And I asked her if she could structure things for optimal human health and well-being, what would she do? Like
what's her perfect world?
Right. And what does she need? What does a freelancer really need to do in order to optimally work in this environment?
The first thing I think I have to say is that we all need to take care of ourselves first. And so I think to have a successful business, especially, well, of any ilk, but of my ilk for sure, where I am both the face of the business and the workings of the entire business, I need to be in top form. I need to be healthy. I need to be happy. I need to feel positive about the work I'm doing. So I need to sleep at night. I need to eat well. I need to exercise, all that stuff. And I think if you have the entrepreneurial mindset to any degree, you're probably something of a go-getter. You're something of a... you're probably kind of relentless on some fronts and all that, which is great, but I think it really has to be tempered with pacing and self-care and all that good stuff. So, and I see that lacking in some people, and I have freelancer friends who will pull literally all-nighters, and they're, you know, people in their 30s or whatever, and I'm kind of like, you're just wrecking that train. Once in a while or whatever, probably fine. But, yeah, I would say that's something that is not touted that much, you know, in our world of get it and do this and, you know, pedal to the metal and 24/7 social media and all this stuff, that kind of just breathing, relaxing, you know, stimulating your mind in other ways beside your work. You know, I really have endeavored now to make time to read every day, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes before bed, and, you know, read an actual book and sit there and be a passive intaker of words for a change. And I think that balance and that self-care is really key.
It sounds like April is really kind of a sharpen the saw kind of gal. Goes back to Steve Covey's old rules in it about 7 habits of highly effective people. And one of them is sharpening the saw. And she's relying on the reality that she is her own instrument, right? And so she's really trying to take it into account that if I destroy this tool, then I can't deliver good services. And I can't really have the great life that this flexible arrangement permits me. I've just worn myself out. And so she's trying to get perspective and invest in her. And I think that's really, wise advice, I believe. And I think we all could take it no matter where we are.
Yeah. And I think that anyone in work might be in a position where they, you know, if you've got a workaholic tendency, you probably could go ahead and do it. But especially, it seems to me, the independent worker, because no one even knows potentially, you know, when you have a boss and you report and you've got coworkers, like everyone's like, hey, you know, Steve, you probably should go home, you know?
Yeah.
But when you're independent, you can, you don't have the same kind of rails that right. might keep you back on track.
Yeah. It's like, either there's this danger zone. Either you're a little bit lazy because you don't have people prodding you. Mm-hmm. Right. Or you're so far deep into it that there's no boundaries.
Yeah.
And she's calling for boundaries without the laziness.
Yeah. And yeah. that makes sense. I mean, we need people. We need a community for that. We need some accountability. We might need some coaching or some kind of consulting.
And, you know, it used to sound like that was all nicey, nice fluff stuff. But there's just a lot of science around this now, around how much sleep you need.
Yeah.
We need more sleep. Yeah. than we previously thought was needed. Now it's like 8.5 hours or maybe even 9 hours, depending on your age.
Yeah.
We're talking about, and we know that what foods go in you, the energy it gives you and how it drags you down. Right. We know that people are more resilient and more available when they have friends. We know that people are more resilient and have more ideas when they have hobbies. And so we're realizing that the word recreating actually does capture exactly what's going on, and she's advocating for it. So kudos to her.
Yeah. And kudos to Megan for seeing the same thing. She expresses it a little differently. Yeah. For her, it's kind of an optimistic look at the future. Like if she could, I asked, what excites you about work in the next 10 years?
What excites me about the next 10 years of work is, a couple of things. I'm seeing more and more people do things that they really like and really care about for no wage because they have capacity. That's cool. That's not something that I was raised to think that people did. You did the work you got paid for. Like, maybe you served your church, or maybe you served a nonprofit, or like did community stuff. But mostly, your work was work you were paid for. And yes, like, everybody and their mother can start a blog, or, you know, it's not, there's lots of things that are easy to do in addition to your work. But I'm seeing people, like, because technology has sped up the way some of these folks work, they're able to take on things that they really couldn't have before, in addition to their work, just out of the goodness of their hearts, or because they have a passion for it. And that's cool. Yeah, so like, I have like entrepreneurial friends who, friends that are entrepreneurs who own a big piece of land in Maryland, and they had been living on the land and that I think they inherited maybe. And then he was working as a developer. Well, he got to a point in his career where he could leave that because he didn't want to be doing that kind of work anymore. And now he's a custom furniture builder, and he's building furniture with the wood from his land. But the way that he can have this marketplace for his work is because of the internet. So like, that just kind of seems like the best of both worlds, sort of. Same with friends that are like, that own distilleries and breweries. Even the artists that I know, they just have like a whole new consumer base audience because of the internet, which is allowing them to do their art more. Just a new an ecosystem for their creative pursuits.
That is not the answer that we would have gotten in 2005.
Not even close.
1995?
No.
85? 65? Right? 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 That is the millennial answer.
Yeah.
It's the millennial world.
Yeah.
Right? That what they're looking forward to and they see happening is that people are able to live full lives. They can invest their energies in all the places that's important to them. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting. The internet has enabled it. because yeah. we're so connected.
So at the one hand, we have the internet, this global marketplace of ideas and commerce and relationship. And on the other hand, what was key, I think, about something she said, you know, the guy's gonna build furniture from the wood on his own land, the right. locality of that, you know, the hyper, at the one hand, it's this hyper world.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, it's this hyper local.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, and we have this big movement for local everything these days.
Yeah.
And I was also reading recently about people are young people are moving from the cities to the countryside.
Hmm.
People in the countryside, young folks, are still moving to the cities.
Yeah.
It's like this reverse migration. Before we had the migration from the countries, you know, the agrarian yeah. kind of people into the cities.
Yeah, which is still going
for
on.
For life, yeah, it's still going on. But now we have the opposite happening.
Counter-migration.
People are seeking a new life, the life they want to live, and technology is enabling them to reach the markets, to stay in contact,
mm-hmm.
to do all kinds of things they weren't, to live the lives they wanted to live in. It's so hippie,
mm-hmm.
which is, of course, goes back to, you know, millennials, who were their yeah. parents, the hippies.
Yeah.
And so they're living the lives that their parents wanted to live, right?
Yeah.
It's cool, baby. Maybe that's more 70s. I don't know. Right? But it's really interesting. It's cool. It's so true. And it's enamoring for me.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. What kind of future is out there if more and more of those people do that? And if more and more people are freelancing and doing this independent work, like, what does the future hold?
The image that came to mind in my head, and I'm no prognosticator, futurist yeah. dude, was the images we always see in sci-fi movies where people are out in the countryside kind of alone. And then this hovercraft comes in and delivers princess, you know, whatever, you know, and there's this mix of high tech. So it, you know, maybe the completion of this future is what we're starting to see with drones.
Mm.
Right. So we're seeing Amazon's now, I think, delivering with drones in some places mm-hmm. and they're working all that out. How do we get products, physical products from remote places to other, you know, other places in the same way we can get information.
And
without highways.
And I was thinking of the car is just kind of a drone for people. It's just going to, you know, get into the car picks you up. It takes you where you want to go. It's driverless. It's automatic. And then that frees you up to work and to connect in different ways.
Yeah. So if we're having driverless cars, do you need to be in it at all? Maybe you have your own delivery van and you plug in the locations and you send it out to deliver your products in your own small, I mean, who knows
yeah.
what's possible.
Right, right.
But maybe the physical transport of things from place to place maybe completes this picture
yeah.
that she's kind of dreaming of.
Yeah.
Let's wait 15 years and see.
Yeah.
We'll be old by then.
Well, I feel old already by listening to these two folks, but I've sure learned a lot from listening to these millennials independently working. And it's been a fun topic. I'd be curious to know what our listeners think too.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to hear what they have to say about this topic. I want to hear what they have to say about our opinions about, you know. You know, I can imagine a mixed bag. But one thing's for sure, I think that these young ladies are showing a growth mindset. They're learning, they're reflecting, they're learning about themselves and they're moving on.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic and I'm impressed by them.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. I'm impressed by you, too.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, Ken.
Talk to you later.
All right.
So thanks for listening to WorkWise. For more information on this podcast, see creativitylabs.us. And to visit Mike's website, go to credoconsulting.us. And you can check me out at accentinteractive.com. Oh, and don't forget to check out the presentation skills program. That's at credoconsulting.us/present. I'm Ken Kennard.